Blog Talk Radio.
Anita Bryant would have a stroke.
Or a pie in the face.
Oi! Frank Layden!
Oi!
Good evening. Welcome to Erie House. Holy timey radio. Boy, we got some radio for you today. We're going nuts with mad scientists. Dale Kay from Spook Show here along with
Dave Bigley from Weirdest Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One, and along with
apparently the third person in the chat room. It is I, Guy the Glue, blah blah to you all.
That's just, like, even, at the moment there's just three of us, but I expect it to grow.
Even there,
yep,
it's
yep. I know. Ah, there's Fogsbane. Oh. Yay! Ah, Fogsbane is here. Blibbly Fogsbane. He made it. Just came in.
Under
just
a wire or hidden wire or barbed wire or something.
Yep.
I hear
millions
first
of others who we can't see or locate.
Yes.
Or prove. Anyway.
On air. Yes.
What a perfect
I heard horse
for the
trumpet.
Three of us tonight. Mad science.
Hello.
What a wonderful topic. Yes. It's just you think you throw in a Frankenstein maybe later. I mean, there's always good stories about mad scientists. All scientists that have gone mad. But we've got three tales tonight and two tales tomorrow night.
Yep. And
there you go.
Do you guys have a favorite mad scientist?
Oh, wow. That's a good
like
one.
From, say, from movies or from literature or from radio.
Well, one of my early in my life, one of my favorite ones was that Simon guy who was the mad scientist on Underdog.
Oh, wow. That is Simon Bar Sinister. And that was in my head, Dave. That was weird. That was in my head. I was going, Simon.
The very first mad scientist that I really came in contact with anywhere. And he still sticks in my head to this day.
Very, very good. Ah, I had forgotten him. Yeah. How about Gar?
Fogsbane voted for Dr. Gangrene. And I've seen that guy.
Yeah, he's a horror host. A very nice man. Very nice man.
Oh, there's another guy. Oh, what is that? Mad scientist guy. Oh, I can't remember his name.
Mine's
crazy.
A
it'll come to me later.
Me either. You're not alone.
Mine's a toss.
I have no idea who you're talking about.
It's a toss up between who?
The first one that put an impression on me has to be the Nutty Professor.
Oh, man. Now, did the Nutty Professor invent flubber?
No, that was Fred McMurray. He was the absent-minded professor.
Yeah, that's different.
Absent-minded.
Yeah, we don't think he was mad. He was just absent-minded.
Right.
If Gar was to become a scientist, there you go. Okay.
There you go.
But you'd forget next week if you were a mad scientist and have to start all over again.
Yeah, exactly. That too.
And tonight, three tales: Inner Sanctum, 2000 plus, and Favorite Story.
Yes.
Yeah, and I was talking to Gar Knight, and I think, did you get a chance to listen to it? I think this was a pilot episode because they talk about placing sponsors here and this and that. So, for some reason, I think this was just an audition program sent out to different stations.
Curiously, I knew the story before it got too in-depth, and I was like, I don't remember this story. So here, I thought I had never been acquainted with this particular program, and apparently it was already in the noodle. So the recall doesn't work well, but every once in a while, a new bulb flickers on that flickered out a little while ago. So,
well, you know, it's like that refrigerator light bulb. Sometimes it's on, sometimes it's off.
I know.
Yeah.
That's right. I need, maybe I need elephant tranks too. I don't know. Maybe they're
like, hey now, not while you're working, pal.
Sure.
The Then you'll start acting crazy and randomly.
Yeah.
You're so
well,
random.
It first starts when you start counting with your foot.
Yeah.
Because we don't need anybody stampeding the Erie House.
Yeah.
We don't need that.
It's a real problem when you're trying to count to 13 before you have to get to your feet. So that's a problem.
That too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know. What'd you do now, Wilbur? All right, Wilmer.
Where shall we start tonight? Since we were talking about favorite story, why don't we get into that one? It's a title.
Why don't we start with our favorite story?
It's entitled Diamond Lens.
Yeah, interesting. Ronald Coleman was your host, and I think acted in some of them as well. And reportedly, this was a completely syndicated by good old Frederick Ziv of the ZIV Corporation. And I guess they were in negotiations for Ronald Coleman for 6 months, and they eventually arrived on a compromise that would net Ronald Coleman a reported $150,000 per year for a guaranteed 3 years plus a percentage of sales.
Nice.
Ziv, for his part, fronted the reported $117,000 for the first set of 13 transcriptions and breathed a huge sigh of relief when the series immediately took off.
I think something's coming off the newsroom here.
Yeah, the Ziv Corporation, it just came in hot off the wire. They were also the inventor of the ends of shoelaces.
Those are called eglets, aren't they? Eglets.
Yeah, they are.
There were a total of 156 episodes of Favorite Story.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep. Couldn't find too many ads for it, but yeah, Ronald Coleman was the host of many of these, as he will be today, yes?
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he's not related to anyone named Dabney.
Do we have an original broadcast date for this, Jim?
And we do, September 20, 1947.
This is Ronald Coleman, inviting you to radio's most dramatic half hour. Favorite Story. Your sponsor presents Ronald Coleman in Favorite Story. Your sponsor is proud to bring you America's most distinguished actor, Mr. Ronald Coleman, as the host and narrator of this Favorite Story series. Some of the outstanding personalities in America have assisted your sponsor and Mr. Coleman in selecting the exciting dramas which your sponsor will present on Favorite Story. In the weeks to come, you'll hear the story choices of Bing Crosby, Ingrid Bergman, Fred Allen, Shirley Temple, and dozens of others. And now at this point, after your sponsor has presented his opening commercial message, we introduce Mr. Ronald Coleman, who will tell us about tonight's favorite story.
Did you ever hear a piece of music composed for 80 symphony musicians and 4 airplane engines? Well, there is such a symphony, and the man who startled the world with it is the same man who chose this week's favorite story. He's one of the century's most brilliant modern composers, the famous bad boy of music, Mr. George Antheil. The story Mr. Antheil picked as his favorite is one of the maddest fictions ever dreamed for the literary mind. And when you've heard it, I think you'll agree. It's a fantastic yarn about science and insanity. Fitz James O'Brien wrote it, and William Conrad is going to play the leading role. For all of you who love the amazing and the bizarre, here's George Antheil's favorite story, The Diamond Lens.
Sounds like a circus. This fellow Lindley's lecture ought to give us the biggest laugh of the year.
What's so funny about Professor Lindley?
The old fellow's crazy. Cracked on the subject of submicroscopic animula. Look, when he comes to the question and answer period, ask old Lindley if he believes there are any worlds of life beyond the reach of the most powerful microscopes. See what he says. See what he says.
And now, students, we have a few moments left before the end of the lecture period. Are there any questions?
Yes. Professor Lindley.
Yes?
Do you believe that living creatures exist beyond the magnifying limits of our best microscopes?
Why do you ask that question?
Well, I've heard, sir, that you hold definite opinions about subvisual life.
I do. I do indeed.
Professor, what forms do you believe these creatures take?
Human, sir. They have a definitely human form. You may laugh. Others have. But I swear to you that there exists in every drop of water a universe that you dream not of. Other scientists tell you of atoms, of electrons rotating planet-like within these atoms. All this only guessed at, never seen by the human eye. But I tell you, these electrons, like our Earth, have life upon their crusts. And I tell you that this life is human.
How do you know these things, Professor?
How do I know? Because I have seen them. I began this research by accident. I was a young man, a student at the university in Edinburgh, just beginning to experiment with a microscope. On the floor above me lived a rather eccentric young gentleman named Jules Simon.
Lindley. Lindley, are you awake?
Who is it?
Simon, let me in. Lindley, I've just had the most amazing experience. Do you believe in spirit mediums?
Oh, I don't know much about them.
Well, I've just spent the evening with an amazing one, a Madame Busby. And believe me, Lindley, I had a conversation through her with my own great-grandfather.
That's astonishing.
It is astonishing. How she cuts through the veil into the other world. Almost the way your microscopes bring other worlds within our reach.
Simon, I hope your Madame Volpe has better contact with her other world than I have with mine.
Oh, you're not discouraged, old man.
Very. Our lenses are such crude affairs. We scientists must be content to grind imperfect glass into imperfect shapes. And beyond 1,000 diameters, our microscopes refuse to show us that other world.
Then I suggest you consult Madame Volpe. Her door into the other world is not such a narrow one.
You come for a communication, Professor Lindley.
Yes, Madame Volpe.
From any particular spirit?
A certain man.
Did you ever know this person on this earth?
No, he died long before I was born.
You will seat yourself at the table, Professor Lindley, and place your hands upon its soul. I will extinguish the lamp.
You require complete darkness?
The visitors from the other world insist on it.
Oh.
Now, our hands press on the table. They are strong tonight. You are fortunate, Professor. Will the spirits communicate with this gentleman? They will speak with you. What spirit do you wish?
I should like to speak with the ghost of Anton van Leeuwenhoek.
Anton van Leeuwenhoek. This gentleman wishes to speak with Anton van Leeuwenhoek.
Who calls me?
Are you Anton? Leeuwenhoek.
I am
the same Leeuwenhoek who invented the microscope.
I am he.
Sir, I am a lens maker like yourself. Tell me, can the microscope be brought to perfection?
It can, and by you.
But how? I've racked my brain. For the love which you bear to science, please help me.
A diamond.
A diamond?
Of 140 carats, submitted to electromagnetic currents for a long period.
Yes?
Will experience a rearrangement of its atoms. And if you pierce that stone through its axis, you will be able to grind the universal lens.
Will great discoveries come from such a lens?
So great that all which has gone before is nothing. Now I am called. I must go. I must go.
I had the secret. It was logical, intensely logical. All that night, I lay awake dreaming of the discoveries I would make with my diamond lens. But where would I find a diamond of 140 carats? The next evening, I decided to enlist the help of my neighbor, Simon.
A diamond of 140 carats? But Lindy, the idea is preposterous. There aren't a dozen stones in the world of that size.
Nevertheless, I must find it.
Well, if you're serious, there's only one place where you'd have the remotest chance of finding it.
Where is that?
Amsterdam. That's where all diamonds go eventually.
Do you suppose that any of the jewelers in Amsterdam will let me borrow a diamond for 140 carats?
Why, of course they'll let you borrow one, Lenny. And all they'll ask you to put up for security is the Grand Duchy of Luxembourg.
Everyone laughed at me, even as Simon did. But the thing had become an obsession. I must build a microscope with a diamond lens. They started calling me Mad Lindley when I bought my steamship passage to Holland. Perhaps I did seem mad to travel in steerage on the mission of a millionaire. Begged them in the interest of science to allow me the use of such a diamond. I had no fortune, no patron, nothing but a few guineas and a fantastic theory. But at last I gave up, bought my passage back to Scotland on the next steamer and went back to my lodgings to pack my trunk. A slip of paper underneath my door. Professor Lindley, if you desire to find what you seek, come tonight at midnight to the yellow brick house on the Borneo Strut. Yes? I am Lindley. Come in, Professor Lindley. You're a few minutes early.
I received your note. I'm very anxious to know if you have what I'm looking for.
How much do you want it?
So much that I would give my life gladly if I might have the use of such a diamond for 1 year.
Well, the gift of your life, my dear professor, is of no interest to me. Come. Mr. Lindley, see what you find inside this small black box. It is heavy. There is. Open. The clasp works easily. Very well. I call it the Eye of Morning.
How did you get it?
Is that any concern of yours?
I must have it, sir.
It is yours.
Mine?
With the payment of £1,000,000.
Where would I get such a sum?
Well, if you want this gem as much as I think you want it, you will find a way.
You are right, sir. I do want this stone as much as you think. And I will find a way to have it.
Of course you will.
You recall that I said I would sacrifice my life to own this diamond?
I recall very well.
You should know that I am ready to sacrifice another man's life, too, if necessary.
But surely... No.
Stay back. I want this diamond very much, sir. You know how much.
I have friends nearby. They will hear you.
But a knife is very silent.
No, don't!
When the Amsterdam police found a man knifed to death in a yellow brick house on the Borneo Strait, I was already on board my steamer bound for Scotland. And after all, why should they suspect Mad Lindley? There were no witnesses. Oh, yes. There was one. One eye which observed all that happened. The eye of mourning.
Mr. Ronald Coleman will bring us Act Two of tonight's exciting story, The Diamond Lens. But at this point, your sponsor brings you a message about the product that makes these broadcasts possible. Your sponsor may want to point out that just as Shirley Temple has selected Little Women as her favorite story to be done in this series, so the people of this city have selected the sponsor's product as their favorite. And now, after the commercial is over, here again is Ronald Coleman.
And I'm not Ronald Coleman, but I have dressed like him once. you know what? All kidding aside, I made a comment in the chat earlier. A little scratching and popping is better than not having these. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Because
as much as there is available, there's probably twice as much that's gone seemingly forever.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's better to have it scratchy and such. Because remember, these are pressed onto transcription discs, a good portion of these programs, and by doing that, the records. We're just glad they survived long enough to be put into a digital format. And there are some people that go around and they spend hours and hours and hours for each production to really clean things up. I think they've done a lot of that with the one of the old time radio with Spirit Radio, and
yes,
but yeah. So there are people out, but then some of the things they do, like the X-1s, were one of those shows that were put onto the audio tape. So that gave them more flexibility and less scratches because it wasn't there, but. Much easier to erase because it was all magnetically put on.
There you go. And we got...
Interesting on this particular show for ZIV, they had a wide range of prices for this show. For instance, you could air it for $12 a week on a station reaching less than 10,000 persons. But a cost of $1,000 a week in New York because there were so many more people there and the sponsors were there. Other shows that were cheaper, Easy Aces sells for $375 for performance. Its top price is only $30. And the Wayne King Show is two of the most popular transcribed shows on the air at the time. So.
Yes.
Go ahead. I was going to say exactly what you were saying. Fogsbane,
yeah.
Request, does Dave have any wired recordings and or players?
I have a friend that has a wire recording. I do not have one, but I guess, you know, I almost picked one up. There was one in a kind of a secondhand store, and it really wasn't that expensive. I should have gotten it. A friend of mine had one. He would use certain types of... a wire that you can use that's even available today and was able to record on that, a very thin type of clothesline, metal clothesline wire, he was able to actually record on that, on his machine. I thought
wow.
That was really cool.
That is cool.
In my parents' house, there is a old 78 disc cutting machine, which is how some of these programs survived as well, people recording them that had the luxury of that. But I don't know where you'd get the material to record it onto today.
The blanks?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure that there were a lot of transcription devices used by doctors in the medical field and a lot of other things. So there's probably somewhere there are possibly still existing in a box someplace.
You're right. You see them in a lot of movies, the old dictaphone. You see a lot of them in the old dictaphone type things.
There was some?
Almost like a cylinder, almost like the old Edison cylinders in a way, but they weren't wax. They were metal, I think. It was like a tinfoil type thing.
There was some crime mystery movie that had a lady psychiatrist, and she was recording stuff directly onto an LP that they had.
That
was kind of wild. You see those. A long time ago, I was into editing audio where I would spend these hours and hours Dave was talking about. And yes, I mean, if you have the time and you can sit down and go through a single file for 2 or 3 days, you can get rid of all the scratches and pops and bumps.
And what it takes.
But that, you know, you're really assigning yourself quite a journey. It's cool, but
Well, for a half hour program, but there are some people that have maybe they've been paid to do it. I don't know. Maybe they do it because they love the old radio programs. I don't know. I do a lot of editing, but I could never do that. Not. I do some cleaning up before I bring them here usually, but nothing like that.
Again, so, it's having the opportunity and the time available.
Yes.
Access programs and time. You know, that's pretty much it.
Yep.
I'm back.
I didn't know you left.
Oh, you got this? Did you get disconnected? I see you. I'm seeing two of them.
Oh
my!
And twins of me.
This is why I don't wear the glasses on the radio. I don't want to see two of nobody.
I don't blame you in my case.
Anyway.
One is too many.
Hold on, radio.
Let's wrap up. Our story, our favorite story, no less.
Favorite story. Woohoo.
We continue with Act Two of George Antheil's favorite story, The Diamond Lens. You know, the ways of the normal human mind are complex and strange, but in the diseased mind, where the subconscious infolds dreams of the most terrifying nature, the brain of man becomes a miracle of strangeness. And when that brain belongs to a scientific genius such as Professor Lindley, the power of his thought shatters anything which stands in his way. With Amsterdam behind him, with a stolen diamond in his pocket, Professor Lindley returns by packet to his native Scotland.
Back in Edinburgh, I hurried to my room and closeted myself with my prize. There it lay on my work table. The Eye of Morning, one of the largest diamonds in the entire world. Clamping an optician's loop in my eye, I scanned the inside of the gem. There was not a single flaw. I waited. Exactly 140 carats. I smiled at my good fortune, my cleverness. They could call me Mad Lonely now. What did I care? I owned a diamond which was worth the ransom of an emperor. I set to work. I built a large galvanic battery of more than 2,000 plates. This enormous electrical power was fed into a coil of wire wrapped around the iron core of an electromagnet. Then a powerful field between the poles of this magnet. I placed the Eye of Morning. Day and night, night and day, for 3 weeks, I subjected the diamond to this magnetic flux. Of course, I could not sleep. My eyes almost never left the gem.
It seemed to grow in luster and brilliance. And to my amazement, when there was no light at all in the room, the diamond shone of its own luminescence with a ghostly blue lavender glow. At last, I calculated the molecular rearrangement of the diamond should be completed. I cut off my electrical switches. Then began the most exhausting toil I've ever known. I set about grinding my diamond lens, polishing it to perfection, and then the exhausting and tortuous work of boring the hole through the center of the axis, as Leeuwenhoek had instructed, all with precision to the millionth of an inch. And then at last, after weeks, months of superhuman effort, my diamond lens was completed. And I stood trembling on the threshold of new worlds. My hand shook as I made the apparatus ready. Now, what should be the first object to be scrutinized through this most powerful of all microscopes? Why not the elemental substance, the most common fluid in our everyday lives, a drop of water? I placed a single drop of distilled water on my microscope slide. Then I covered it with a thin film of turpentine to prevent rapid evaporation. I adjusted my lamp. And with a strange mixture of anticipation and dread, I looked through the eyepiece of my diamond lens. Seemed to gaze upon a vast space, the limits of which extended far beyond my vision. Then I made a minute adjustment with my microscope. Suddenly, a many-colored sphere leaped into view. A perfect ball, suspended in space, even as the full moon hangs in the evening sky. And it floated nearer and nearer, and it filled the entire field of view. I could see its surface clearly. Mountain ranges and valleys, banks of gaseous clouds and oceans of vapor. This must be the nucleus of an atom, or even an electron. The power of my diamond lens had reached into the very essence of matter. And now the surface of the sphere seemed so close to me that I could see forests and rocks and deserts. And I thrilled to think of what animal life I might observe. A universe was swinging into view, all contained in a droplet of water. My microscope now peered into a greenish glade. I thought I saw a moving shape. Anxiously, would it be some animal, some giant insect, a reptile, or something hitherto unknown? At last, the gauzy veils of cloud foliage vanished, and I gazed upon a woman. Did I say a woman? She had the outlines of humanity, but there the resemblance stopped. Her adorable beauty far exceeded that of any mere woman who ever walked our earth. Her eyes were mystic violet, dewy and serene. Her hair flowed out of her proud head like a track of a falling star through the night sky. And the perfect roundness of her limbs formed suave and enchanting curves. And I dare not even attempt to describe her grace of movement, the way she floated effortlessly through the atmosphere of her subatomic world.
You think I am mad, insane. You, in the smug complacency of your logic, think I dreamed I saw this lovely creature. Well, you lie. Because you yourselves have never had the ingenuity, the industry to make such a microscope. Because you have never heard of such things, you dismiss them. Is it so incredible that there might be other universes within ours? Is it preposterous that a drop of water resting on a microscope slide might contain a whole Milky Way system of planets, constellations, and galaxies? And is it beyond belief that a shrewd scientific investigator like myself might peer into this minute system and see a living creature? My friends, even as I speak to you now, some super gigantic scientist with eyelashes light years long may be depositing our universe contained in a drop of water on his microscope slide. He may be adjusting his diamond lens to peer in astonishment at you, madam. And he may be falling in love with you. Is that madness? I confess to you, there was a moment when I felt my reason falter, my sanity slipping away. As I watched that beautiful woman through my lens, I knew that here I had found complete perfection in womankind. And I knew, too, that I loved her. I would have given my life to kiss that incredible creature, to embrace her womanly form in my arms. But we were separated by the greatest gulf which ever lay between lovers. I could see her, but she could never see me. I could never let her know that I existed and that I loved her. And then a shadow passed over her face. She hesitated in her dance, and she looked up at me with an expression of great pain. And even as I watched her graceful limbs withered, she writhed in agony, and her suffering tore at my soul. Yet there was nothing, nothing I could do. She was dying before my eyes, yet I could not save her. And the rainbow-colored forest in which she danced was shriveling, too. They twisted about her. They enveloped her. And she disappeared from view. I looked down at the stage of my microscope. And the glass slide was still there. But the drop of water was gone. And the whole universe which held my exquisite dancer had evaporated into the night air. How can I describe to you the emotions which flooded in me at that instant? Despair at my loss such a man has never known. Terror at my loneliness. Yes, sheer stark terror at the realization that this creature, who had in these brief hours become more surely a part of me than my own immortal soul, would not return. And then anger, a horrific rising fury seething in my brain against the object which had brought to me this wonder. Now forever lost. For a long, horrible moment, I stood staring at it. There on the table before me, my diamond lens, made miraculously fragile by the rearrangement of molecules I had achieved. My lens set with such infinite precision within my microscope. And then a muffled cry within my throat. I raised one of the massive andirons before the fire, and with a strength beyond my own, I struck! Again! 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 And at last, there on the floor beneath my feet were but shattered remnants of the object of my hatred, my diamond lens. And that, young gentleman, is my answer to your question. Do creatures exist beyond the realm of human sight? They do. I, of all the world, have seen them. Good day, gentlemen.
There you have it, the diamond lens, the scientific nightmare of a somewhat unrecognized talent in American letters, Fitz James O'Brien. May I commend William Conrad for his excellent portrayal of Dr. Linley, and congratulations to our young conductor, Robert Mitchell, for his remarkable music. And, of course, our deepest thanks to Mr. George Antile for choosing The Diamond Lens as his favorite story.
Ronald Coleman will be back in just a moment to tell you about next week's favorite story. In the meantime, your sponsor once again has an opportunity to tell you about the product that is advertised on these programs. And he concludes it by saying, and now Mr. Coleman will tell us about next week's story.
To take you back to the happy days of your first dance and your first kiss. It's Louisa May Alcott's unforgettable novel, Little Women. We know that Joe and Laurie, Meg and Amy, Beth and Mommy have always been among your favorite characters, too. So when Favorite Story presents Little Women, we hope you'll be listening.
Favorite Story is presented every week at this time by your sponsor. We hope you will join us next week when Mr. Ronald Coleman will present Shirley Temple's favorite story, Little Women. Until next week, then, we bid you goodbye on behalf of your sponsor.
Ah, but was it really Shirley Temple's favorite story? We may never know.
I didn't ask her.
Well, next time you see her.
Maybe a while, I hope.
Yeah, I hope so. A long while, my friend. Long while. All right, so that was that, and we learned a little bit listening to that show. Let's learn a little more. Eerie House Radio proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story.
If seeing is believing, then jumping rope is defying gravity with the repeat button on.
I see nothing. I was not here. I did not even get up this morning.
Well.
I think you can tell him if he gets up, it kind of shakes the room.
Yeah, that's right. Mm. That's our boy Schulte.
Yep.
John Banner.
I was not even here.
I was not even alive then.
He would have been good on the Get Smart in the Chaos organization. I think he would have been a great contributing member.
Yes, of Chaos.
Yes.
Actually, Werner Klemperer would have been pretty good, too.
We don't do that here in Chaos.
Love
that.
Hogan.
Jim Hogan, I'm so happy to see you.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah, Bing Crosby took a lot of chances with that, you know, because it was, in a sense, so close to World War II and so many bad memories to try and make a comedy out of it. That was something that people did not think would work.
Yeah, a lot. Yeah, there was a lot of people not behind that, and yet it was an amazing success.
Yep. Now, would you say Doc from the Back to the Future movies was a mad scientist per se?
Oh,
yeah, I would
not
say
that.
So.
Yeah.
I would say so, what? Yeah.
I don't think you have to be evil to be a mad scientist. You could be very well intentioned.
No,
sure,
no.
Yeah.
I wanted to bring this up, if I can remember where I put it. And I'm paraphrasing here. There's this great thing about science and the recent pandemic we've been through. And to paraphrase a comedian by the name of Jon Stewart, he said something along the lines of, the end of the world isn't going to be decided by generals and bombs. It's going to be decided by a scientist saying two little words. It works.
It works.
It works. And because, you know, with all the stuff that we've had going on with possibly people manufacturing things of ill-gotten gain or whatever. And he came up with that, and I that resonated as a funny to store in the back of my head somewhere.
There you go. And we got some more funny stories or not so funny stories about mad scientists. We still have Inner Sanctum in 2000 plus. Where were we going next?
One has Raymond Edward Johnson. The other one does not. Which one do you want?
Ooh,
one
you
has a giant and one
Johnson.
Doesn't.
You can call me.
But you don't have to call me Johnson. That's right.
So which one do you want? The one with Raymond Edward Johnson or not?
Let's go over to 2000 plus, and then
that would be Raymond Edward Johnson.
Yeah.
A winner.
I win a prize, and the prize is
there you go.
Really
this is what you win just
walk.
For the radio. There you go. That's your prize. All right.
My prize plus. Is 2000 plus, a story called The Giant Walks.
Yeah, 2000 plus was the very first of the adult science fiction programs, beating out the Dimension X by, I think, just like 3 weeks. But it was indeed the very first. They used all original stories where many of the other anthology shows would use, you know, some of the good stories written by science fiction writers and in science fiction publications. But these were all original stories in 2000 plus, which probably explains why it didn't last all that long.
Yep, written especially for this program, then, I guess.
Yes.
It would have been nice. Would have been kind of wild to have a science fiction program where they take all of the stories from the Brothers Grimm and then scientific them up into science fiction. That would have been bizarre.
You could have done that. A good writer, I think, can do that. Is adapt
well, isn't that kind of what they did
on
isn't that kind of what they did with, in a sense, sort of with Grimm? Which was set off, and I'm never going to the state of Washington, man, because of that show.
Yeah, Grimm was kind of interesting. I enjoyed that program for as long as it lasted.
I think it had
a few stops and starts.
Yeah, it did. But interesting show it was.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, that was Mighty Joe Young telling us we got to move along. If you heard that a little in the background. This is The Giant Walks from 2000 plus, and do we got a broadcast date, or do we have a broadcast date?
According to 8 people in Saginaw, Michigan, and Schenectady, New York, November 8th, 1950.
I knew Schenectady was coming.
It was like a terrible nightmare. Even now, I sometimes wake from a dream and find myself shaking from the memory of it. I'll never forget when I first saw him. A man so monstrous, so unhuman, that I refused to think it could ever happen again to anyone else. But who can be sure? Others have had the same idea. Oh, yes, the law forbids it, but laws are broken every day. Will it happen again to someone else someday in the future? Perhaps. Perhaps it will happen to many. I don't want to see it.
To hear the story of this strange monster, listen in a moment to 2000 Plus. In a world of tomorrow. Dramatic stories of science fiction from the years beyond 2000 AD. Today, an amazing story of science uncontrolled. The Giant Walks.
Hi,
That's what you are, monsters. That's it. Fight to fill your slimy stomachs. Feed the rats, the doctor said. Always feed the rats. As if you weren't big enough already. If I had my way, I'd kill all you rats. That's what I'd do.
I wouldn't go close to them, Hawkins. A rat 4 feet long can be quite a nasty little thing.
Oh, yes, 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 Dr. Ellsworth.
Is everything ready, Weston?
Yes, Dr. Ellsworth.
Barstow?
Yes, sir.
Then open the cage.
Look at him go. I've never seen a rat run a maze so rapidly.
Check that gold gradient, Weston.
Yes, Doctor. The rat's in the food box now. Let me see. 11.8.
There. You see, Weston, not an unusual intelligence, just high. Well above that of the average rat. Look at them. The power in those legs. Barstow. Just imagine what they could do with their teeth if they had the chance.
It's frightening to think what would happen if all rats were giant rats. If they got loose.
It's evolution, Barstow. Merely the scientific elimination of growth barriers.
Now that your experiment's a success, we can tell the world. Your theories will be accepted. You'll regain your rightful place in science.
Not yet, Barstow. Not yet. I'm already at work on what I consider will be an ultimate experiment. It's only a matter of calculating, checking, and verifying data on the rats so we can build a larger pituitary revitalizer.
Well, what animal do you have in mind for this new experiment, Dr. Ellsworth?
What animal? Well, there's only one that I could possibly be interested in now. It's the next logical step.
Surely you can't mean...
Yes, Barstow. A man.
You wanted to see me, Dr. Ellsworth?
Yes, Weston. I want to talk to you about the experiment on human beings. I want you to help me with the experiment.
Well, I hope you're not thinking of me, Dr. Ellsworth.
What's the matter, Weston? Don't you think it would be valuable to give yourself to science?
Well, it would seem that there are so many to choose from.
So many, Weston? Who, for example? I'm sure that old Hawkins won't do. And we really can't kidnap anyone.
But, Dr. Ellsworth, I was...
I'd say it would be a great honor to be the first real Superman on Earth.
Well, how about Barstow?
Exactly, Weston. Just what I was leading up to. You seem relieved. Yes. In Barstow, we have a real physical specimen. And he seems to have quite a boundless enthusiasm for the future of mankind. An attitude you apparently don't share.
Well, how could we get him to agree to it?
Psychology, Weston. It's merely a matter of appealing, in the proper manner, to his scientific judgment and sense of fair play. Now, here is what I want you to do when he gets back. Well, glad to see you back, Barstow.
Dr. Ellsworth, Weston tells me you're ready to begin the final experiments on man.
Yes, Barstow, I soon hope to be the first of a new race. A race that will make the man of today look like a pygmy, puny and insignificant. If the experiment succeeds, my physical size will double or even triple. I'll be able to live at least 300 years instead of the 100 or so odd years a man can expect today. The brain cells will probably also expand, giving me an intelligence that will make you and Weston look like products of the Stone Age.
Well, I don't think it's fair for you to sacrifice yourself. It's not fair to humanity. If you die, there'll be nobody to carry on.
You know these experiments are illegal. We could never find another subject. It would have to be one of us three or nobody.
Well, I'd be willing to take the chance, Dr. Ellsworth.
And so would I.
You can't go through with this, Dr. Ellsworth. You're needed to direct the experiment.
Gentlemen, gentlemen, I see you have the true scientific spirit. Well, since I am unwilling to give up my right to be the subject, and you're unwilling to let me be the subject, then there's only one way out.
What's that?
We'll draw lots. If you agree, leave the decision up to fate.
That sounds like a good idea. Don't you think so, Barstow? Why, sure, I guess so.
Well, it's the only way out, my boy. One of us must be the guinea pig. Now I'll tear three strips of paper. Now, the lots are arranged in my hand. Whoever gets the short one will submit to the experiment, and there'll be no further objection from any of us. Agreed?
Agreed.
Right.
Choose, gentlemen. Weston? Barstow? Myself.
I've drawn the short one.
Yes.
I'd like some time to see Barbara, Dr. Ellsworth, before the experiment.
I'll give you 3 weeks to straighten out your affairs, Barstow. Then I'll expect you back at the laboratory.
Contacts are wide open.
Cut the circuit, Weston. That's enough. Well, Barstow, are you ready?
Quite ready, Dr. Ellsworth.
As you know, it may be painful at first, but after the primary series, I don't think you'll notice much.
I'm not worried, Dr. Ellsworth.
No, of course not. Well, good luck, my boy.
Thank you, sir.
Contacts open, Weston?
Yes, Doctor.
Then pipe the circuit. Now, that's fine. Now, keep it steady at 3,000. Prepare for the first injection. We'll give him 5 electronic unit charges. Valve open. How are you feeling, Barstow?
Pain. My whole body is numb. You've got to stop the experiment, Dr. Ellsworth.
He's out again. Dr. Ellsworth, you think we're doing the right thing? His heartbeat has slowed down so much, I'm afraid.
Of what, Weston? You're not losing your nerve, are you?
Oh, no. It's only that I thought...
Don't do any thinking, Weston. I'll do that part of it. You just check the regenerator charts.
Very well, Dr. Ellsworth.
Nothing is going to keep me from completing this experiment. And I warn you not to try to interfere, Weston. I'll close the circuit. We'll inject again. 100 cc's.
Valve open. Look at him. 12 feet tall, and he weighs 750 pounds.
Of course, Weston. As I told you, there's very little difference, really, between a rat and a man. We're all animals.
But, Doctor, he hasn't given much sign of life during the past few days. You think his body can stand the strain of all this growth?
Certainly. In fact, I think we'll give him the final super injection today. About 500 cc's should do it.
500? But that's 5 times what we've been giving him.
Yes, Weston. We're building a new skeletal structure. New flesh, cartilage, and bones.
Contacts open.
Keep it steady at 6,000. We've got to provide the final shock for his system.
The valve's completely open, Dr. Ellsworth.
All right. Now. An inch. Barstow, can you hear me? Can you understand what I'm saying? You must talk slowly, Barstow. Slowly. You're not an ordinary human being anymore.
Look, he's getting up.
Hey, what's happening to me? Why is everything so small?
Our experiment is a success, Barstow. You're a Superman. I've made you a Superman.
But I can't move. My head is touching the skylight.
Stoop down, Barstow. There's a rolling door in the side of the laboratory. I think you can crawl through that. Easy, Barstow. Very slowly. That's it. Well... how does the world look now that you have some elbow room?
Small.
muscle and bone. It's my creation. My creation.
Have the report on our testing so far.
Well, as best I can figure, Doctor, the subject can lift almost 20 times as much weight as an ordinary man and run approximately 60 miles an hour without difficulty. Oddly enough, though, he appears to get along fine on 4 or 5 hours sleep a night, but he's consuming food at a rate that's all out of proportion.
Well, that's understandable. He's still making an adjustment. Go on.
Mentally, very superior. He appears to be able to solve the most complicated problems right in his head.
It's all just as I predicted.
But this morning, though, after I just finished giving him the work test, he pulled up a tree by the roots and waved it at me. It was frightening. I ran, and he began laughing. It sounded more like thunder.
Weston, you're letting your imagination run away with you. It's quite obvious what's the matter. He's not getting enough exercise. We've got to give him more physical work to do. Come on.
There he is. Just sitting on that hill and staring.
Boston!
Yes, Dr. Ellsworth?
I want you to take this special shovel we've made for you and dig a trench. Weston will mark it out for you and check your working speed.
All right, Dr. Ellsworth. Whatever you say.
See? It's quite simple. We've just got to keep him occupied.
Dr. Ellsworth, I'd like to ask you a question.
Yes?
What are we going to do with Barstow? I mean, what are we going to tell the world about him? We can't go on continually this way.
Of course we can. And once we're sure of ourselves, we'll get other men. We'll make giants of them. We're building a race, Weston. A race of supermen with which we can rule the world. We've only to learn how to control Barstow so he'll respond to our every command. Then we'll build an army.
Doctor, that's not right.
You know, Weston, you're a good assistant. It's only when you think that you get into trouble.
Slow response there on the board, gang. Sorry about that. We are back after part one of 2000 plus.
It was my bad. I was Raymond Edward Johnson was also the host of Tales of Tomorrow on radio, not the 2000 plus. My bad. My bad.
Oh.
Sorry, folks. Sorry, folks. Hey. Got an interesting story going on here, and the interesting thing is that these are all original stories made for radio, who didn't rely upon actual science fiction writers from the science fiction magazines, and I think that to make it last as long as it did, I think that was quite a feat in itself.
Yeah, and. A good story here of some serious science fiction.
And growing feet.
Yep.
And growing
we went
feet,
to
yes.
a story that was similar to Incredible Shrinking Man, the concept of a world within a world.
Uh-huh.
To now like The Amazing Colossal Man.
So now we're just trying to figure out if size really matters.
What a world, what a world. Ah, you and your little dog.
Yeah, no.
It depends who you talk to. Yeah. And how much you bribe her. Anyway.
Hey, we got a great group in the chat, Dale.
Yeah, we do. CW joins us. Rob Smith Jr. and, of course, Fogsbane. Thank you for being in the chat live with us, along with legions and legions of listeners we don't see, feel, touch here or otherwise.
I believe there's a legion and a half that we can't see. But
yeah.
There could be two legions. We're not sure.
Yeah, I haven't done all the math, but he's right.
We're speculating.
Yeah.
Ring a bell if you got it.
using high-tech technology like the Garculator.
And a slide rule. And a sliding board. And a seesaw.
And a sliding whistle to go with it, to finish it off.
Yeah.
And a sliding whistle. Yes. Yeah, I knew it was in there somewhere.
That is important.
Yes.
You don't have a sliding whistle, you can't do the math.
You can't. Yeah. You can't. It's impossible to do math. And sliding whistles. Yeah, there you go.
Fun little story here. Let's
ring a bell or wrap it up, one of the two.
Yeah, one of the five or seven things.
You can do both.
We can do both.
Woo-hoo. Let's ring a bell to bring in the conclusion of the giant walk.
Barstow, are you awake?
What do you want?
I must talk to you. Dr. Ellsworth wants to use me for the next experiment.
Oh, what's that to me?
I don't think you understand. He's working on a method to control you electronically as a giant. It's what he's been waiting for. And when he can finally control you, he'll begin to make more giants. He wants to build an army of giants so he can take over the world.
That isn't true. Dr. Ellsworth is interested only in science. You just don't want to be a freak as I am, cut off from everything, just because I was unlucky at drawing lots.
No, no, not unlucky, Barstow. Framed. Dr. Ellsworth and I agreed to volunteer just to get you to volunteer. We arranged the lots so that you would be chosen. Don't do anything to me. Oh, please, Barstow, that's why I let you know. I wanted you to do something about it before it's too late. What are you going to do? Where are you going?
These experiments. I'm through, Dr. Ellsworth.
You're raving, Barstow. Go back to your quarters in the barn and we'll talk about it in the morning.
I can't go back to the barn.
Why not?
I'm tired of living in the barn. I knocked it down.
Calm down, Barstow. Calm down before you do any more damage.
Yes, Dr. Ellsworth. That's just what you'd like, isn't it? For me to calm down. To become nothing but a giant tool in your hands. A tool for conquest and revenge. Isn't that so, Dr. Ellsworth?
I don't know what you're talking about.
You know, all right. And what's more important, I know, Dr. Ellsworth. I know that you tricked me into volunteering for this experiment.
What if I did? You were the best physical specimen.
You'd stop at nothing to carry out your hideous experiments. Future of mankind. That's a good one. You're not interested in mankind at all. You're only interested in building a super race for your own ends. You want an army of giants so you can take over the world.
You're mad, Barstow. You are my subject, and you have no right to behave this way. If I had the control of finishing... You knocked out that wall.
Yes, Dr. Ellsworth. And that's just what I ought to do to you. You have no more right to live than I. How much strength does it take for a 30-foot man to kill an ordinary man with his fist, Dr. Ellsworth? Figure that out.
What are you going to do?
I'm not going to do anything to you. I am going to let the World Science Council know about your experiments. They'll know what to do about you.
But you can't leave. You're a monstrosity. The world won't understand you, Barstow. Besides, you have an obligation. You must sacrifice yourself for science.
Dr.
Gone?
Yes, all my plans ruined.
Yes.
Weston, you did this to me. You told him about my plans.
Yes, Dr. Ellsworth, I did.
You've ruined the experiment, Weston. You betrayed science. You have no right to live.
Who are you to decide these things?
Come inside, Weston, now.
A gun?
Right. Come along now, Weston. There's one last experiment I want to perform. I'm curious to see how a man can stand up against a giant rat.
No, no, please, Ellsworth. I'll do anything you want. I don't want to die. I'll be the subject of a new experiment.
It's too late, Weston. Should have thought of those things before. Stand still. There. Right by the cage.
Shut up.
Now.
Don't push me in.
No, I can't. No.
Fire ahead.
Hold me.
No.
Sure glad the old man let me have the jet car tonight.
Oh, it's a lovely night to go riding with you, Bob.
Say, Helen, do you hear something?
The motor, you mean?
No, listen.
I hear it now, too.
I can't imagine it. Oh, well, I guess...
Oh, Bob, over there!
It looks like a man, but...
So big! Oh, Bob!
It's a giant standing in the road in front of us.
Turn the car around, quick!
He's lifting us with his hand.
Why are you afraid of me? I just want to talk to you. I won't hurt you.
Put us down. Put us down, you monster.
I'm not a monster. I am not.
Oh, we're back on the road. He didn't hurt us.
What are you going to do?
I'm going to the police. They've got to know about this giant.
On sector 47 immediately. Strange creature molesting jet travelers on Highway 9. Reported human in appearance. 30 to 40 feet high. May be dangerous. Repeat, may be dangerous.
They've lost rockets, Jim. This is our meat. Just our luck. Probably an invader from Mars.
To all rockets, check destroyer guns before moving into danger area. Repeat, check all weapons.
Hold on. There's something moving in Field 7.
Well, I'll be. It's a man.
But what a man. Rocket 117 to control tower. Located creature moving rapidly in the direction of McKenna City. We're closing in.
Very good, 117. Keep on it. We'll have all available rocket cars join you.
Okay, Jim, we're near enough now. Safety off destroyer guns. We'll fire a couple of warning shots to slow them down.
Safety off.
Fire.
Stop it. He's waving his hands.
We'll circle him. Keep circling.
117 to central control.
Come in, 117. Come in.
Circling giant, prepare to move in for a closer look. Guns ready. Orders. Repeat. Orders outside. He's swinging. Reverse engines. Reverse engines.
Central control calling 117. Central control calling 117. They don't answer, Commissioner.
Confound it. Why can't we get a video screen fixed?
I'm working on it, sir.
Give me that microphone. All police jets and air rockets. All jets and air rockets. Attention. Attention. Rocket 117 has been attacked by the giant. Contact has been lost. Take battle formation blue. Prepare for attack. Prepare for attack. Good luck. We'll blast that creature out of existence.
What could it be, sir? A man from another planet?
It's possible. We can only get that video fixed.
Well, I'm getting it, Commissioner.
Look, there he is. Good heavens, what an enormous creature.
Yes, I see it. Calling all rockets. Take elevation 3,000 and prepare to dive on target.
I've got to see the police commissioner.
You can't. It's a battle emergency. Who let you in the control room?
It's about the giant. We've got to stop your attack.
Are you crazy? That creature's a menace. He's knocked down one of our rockets, and now we're going to get him.
But you don't understand, sir.
Squadrons at all, elevation 3,000. Target's in view. Look, Commissioner, on the video screen. We're ready to open up on them, sir. Just give the order.
No. You've got to call off the attack.
Commissioner, look to the right of the giant near that small hill. Those two men are from Rocket 117. They're walking unmolested toward Junction 9.
Thank God they're all right.
There, you see, he's not dangerous. Stop the attack.
That creature's been running berserk.
Transmit the command for all ships to hold their positions until I give the order, unless the giant attacks them.
Yes, sir.
Orders to all.
Now look here, sir. What do you know about that creature? Is he from another planet? It's an Earthman. How do you know? He escaped from a government antibiotics laboratory. He was a subject of an illegal experiment. I'm Dr. Weston. I work in that laboratory. Well, Earthman or not, he's a madman. We've got to do something about him.
You don't have to do a thing. It'll all be over in a few minutes.
Something's happened. I don't see the giant anymore.
What do you mean, all over, Dr. Weston?
Look at the video screen. There. That's what I mean.
Good heavens.
It's amazing.
Squadron Leader 20 to Control Tower. Something's happened here, sir. I don't see the giant. He's disappeared. What are our orders?
All police jets and rockets. Attack canceled. Repeat, attack canceled.
So you see, Barbara, I had to thank Weston after all. He's a disagreeable character. But if he hadn't acted so promptly, as soon as he found out, those rockets would have finished me.
Ellsworth tried to kill Weston, didn't he, after you broke away?
Yes, with the rats. Weston managed to get outside the cage, and they killed Dr. Ellsworth instead. And shortly after that, the rats fell into a coma, and Weston examined one by X-ray, and he discovered that the new bone structure was in the process of dissolving into cartilage, and that cartilage into flesh, which would soon melt away. And he realized their size had only been maintained by the injections, and they'd soon be back to their original skeletal structure. That's why he went to the police.
Yes, but how did he know you'd shrink, too?
Because they stopped giving me the injections.
Oh, seeing you here like this, I can't believe all those stories in the paper about you. A horrible picture.
I can hardly believe it myself, Barbara. It's like a bad dream. Oh, yes, here's what I came back for. Dr. Ellsworth's safe.
Oh, what's in it?
Here they are. And here they go.
You're burning them.
Years of scientific research up in flames. But I don't want another man ever to go through what I did. Cut off from humanity to be just a specimen in some scientist zoo. I found out one thing, Barbara. Thickness isn't a matter of size. A man can be 30 feet tall or he can be 6 feet tall. It's what he has in his heart that counts. This world doesn't need bigger, more powerful physical specimens. It needs men with bigness of soul who can love, respect their fellow men.
Exciting story on 2000 Plus. The strange adventure of a man who found nothing and was terrified. Be sure to listen next week to Alone. 2000 Plus is produced by Dreyer and Winolson Productions, Incorporated. In today's cast, Joseph Julian was Barstow, Henry Norell was Ellsworth, Lon Clark was Weston, Rhino Rayburn was Barbara, Morton Lawrence was the police commissioner, and Bruce Evans was Hawkins. The script was written by Julian Snyder. The music was composed by Elliot Jacoby. The orchestra conducted by Emerson Buckley. Sound, Walt Shaver and Adrian Penner. Engineer, Bob Albrecht. This is Ken Marvin speaking. From New York.
Okay, I'm clearly seeing double. I don't think it's the diabetes. There's two of me, and now there's two of Gar.
There was two of me. I had to call back, and I erased one of me, but the other one of me is still here. I erased the evil me.
I cannot erase any of mine because none of mine are evil.
I can watch. There goes one.
Oh, I hope he does the right one.
Oh, yeah.
If he does the wrong one, I'm out of here.
It was the wrong one. You're still here.
Oh, yep. Darn. Arrgh.
Damn it.
See, don't do that here in chaos.
Well, it's a good thing it was the right one, because we wouldn't be able to say. Eerie House Radio proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story.
A super race fears only one thing, a super eraser.
Nobody even said Parma.
Parma?
No. But I was thinking it. I was thinking it.
Yes.
We are Fox Zane. We are all mad scientists in our way. Gar, well, that speaks for itself. But Dave's a mad scientist of organizing and scheduling fantastic groupings of radio shows. Hey, I don't know what I do. That bad, but anyway.
You're the ringmaster. The ringmaster. Holding this insanity all together.
Wait, the question, do you hear ringing? Do you hear ringing?
I hear ringing. I hear ringing in my ears.
There's a knock on the phone over there.
There's a knock on the phone.
That's a Cleveland thing.
That is a Cleveland thing.
Knock on the phone over there.
Yeah, because that was something brought out by Goulardi, and I think that Ron Sweet continued that also as the Ghoul, didn't he?
Yes.
Yeah, so, you know. Yeah. Of course, Detroit will try to claim it as theirs, but we know better than that.
Yeah. Well, Detroit is Detroit, so.
Oh, my.
When your version of Parma is called Hamtramck, well, you got problems. That's all I can say.
Stop on the train line in Chicago. All off on Hamtramck.
Yep. Wasn't Kolchak the Night Stalker? Weren't a few iterations of that character in Chicago?
Yeah, the TV series was in Chicago, yes.
Right, the movies were in Vegas and somewhere else.
Vegas and Seattle.
Yep, Seattle.
That's crazy you know that.
And they wrote a third story which they never filmed, which was they were all heading to
Schenectady.
New York. Well, maybe just Schenectady. I thought it was New York City, but
maybe it's Schenectady,
it could have been Schenectady, yeah.
Do we have a poker for Schenectady?
We keep saying Schenectady over and over and over.
Dale, do we have a poker for Schenectady?
I think they had a foxtrot, but I don't think they had a poker.
Our next story
they
is
should
the
have
Dark
had
Chamber
a poker.
From Inner Sanctum. Do we have a broadcast date?
Yes, December 11th, 1945. According to Schenectady, Dr. Octopus was born in Schenectady.
Lipton Tea and Lipton Soup present Inner Sanctum Mysteries. Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum. This is your host to welcome you through the squeaking door. Draw up a tombstone and sit down. Don't mind the fact that we've carved your name on it. Yeah, it's rather lonesome around here tonight, isn't it? Yes, most of the folks who haunt the place are out tonight with their sleds. If it snowed near your house, you may find them ghosting down here.
Mr. Host, ghosts don't go sledding, do they?
Why, of course, Mary. Especially the ghosts of gangsters. They're used to being taken for a sleigh ride.
Well, now, why don't you take your sled and join your friends and let me have a word with our Lipton listeners? Folks, Have you ever noticed how often we all use the words good, better, and best? We're always comparing things, because comparisons help us decide what the best things in life are. For example, the perfect way to prove how really flavorful Lipton tea is to compare Lipton's to any other tea and taste the difference. Lipton's flavor is brisk, never flat or wishy-washy. It gives you all the flavor, tastes just the way you like tea best. No other tea gives you more bright, mellow goodness because that superb flavor of Lipton's is extra rich, extra satisfying. Yes, friends, just compare Lipton's to any other tea. You'll find Lipton's gives you brisk flavor, and you'll find Lipton's wonderful brisk flavor gives you more contentment in every cup.
All right, Mary. Now you go and perch yourself on that teapot over there and get ready to hear about The Dark Chamber. It's an original radio play by Robert Newman, who witnessed the story while peeking through a keyhole. Yes, and our star tonight is Kenneth Lynch, who plays the role of Joel. Our story tonight is about death, violent death, and also about something which is even more terrifying, the unknown. You don't believe that anything can be more frightening than death? Then you've never experienced the ultimate in fear. But you will within the next few minutes. If you'll put out the lights, pull your chair up close and listen to The Dark Chamber.
Police headquarters, Ryan speaking.
Hello, police. Listen, you've got to help me. You've got to. I don't know how you can, but... My name is Watson, Joe Watson. I'm a driver for the Acme Sanitary Hand Laundry.
Address?
Where I am, I don't know. That's part of the trouble.
Now, look.
Hey, wait, listen. I know it sounds crazy, but it's true. Check the laundry. Check the veterans. I'm an ex-GI. They'll tell you I'm straight. Well, I'm in a room someplace. I don't know where it is or how I got here or what I'm here for. I don't even know how long I've been here. It's a big room, but it's funny. No doors, no windows that I can see. Just a couple of chairs and a table with his phone on it. I'm scared.
What do you expect us to do?
Find me. Find out what this is all about and get me out of here.
I don't know.
Oh, listen, this isn't a gag. Can't you tell? You don't know what it's like just sitting here waiting, not knowing where or why or what's going to happen. Can't you trace this call or something?
Well, okay. Hang on.
Oh, thank heaven. I was afraid. Listen, I hear something. Someone's coming. I better hang up. I'll call you back later if I can.
How do you do?
Who are you?
My name's Helming. Dr. John Helming. And your name?
I don't have to tell you anything.
That's very true. Although I didn't think you were aware of it. I think I already know everything about you that I'm interested in knowing.
Like what?
Name? Joseph Watson, age 26. Occupation, employee of the Acme Laundry. Honorably discharged from the Army 6 months ago. With the Bronze Star. And the Purple Heart.
What the... So you cased me. Went through my pockets, huh? Well, if you know that much, you know I haven't got any dough.
Money? I'm not interested in money.
Well, what do you want, then? Where is this place? The last thing I remember is making a delivery on Spruce Street, noticing that the lights were out in the hall and hearing a noise behind me. You or somebody slugged me.
That's right.
Well, will you stop grinning like that and tell me what this is all about?
Of course. I brought you here because I need your help in an experiment. An experiment whose details I've already worked out with mice and rabbits and cats and other animals.
What kind of an experiment?
An experiment in fear.
Fear?
Yes. You fought in the war. You were wounded. That means you've probably known fear. And still, you won the Bronze Star, which means you overcame it. Now, the question is, can you overcome your present fears?
What are you talking about?
You're afraid. Nothing has happened to you yet, absolutely nothing, and yet you are afraid, aren't you? You're afraid because you're face to face with the unknown. Because you don't know what I want and what I'm planning to do. Which is as it should be. And that's the way we'll leave it. For the moment.
Hey, wait a minute. Come back here. Come back, you can't... Hello, police. This is Joe Watson again. Listen, I got a little more dope. I don't know if it'll help, but there was a guy in here just now. Said his name was Helming, John Helming. That's probably a phony. He's about 50, tall, over 6 foot, white hair and gray eyes. No, I still don't know what it's all about or what he's after, but have you been able to trace this number yet? Well, how long will it take? Okay, I'll hang on, but... What? The lights just went out. The room's pitch dark and somebody's coming in again. I better stop. But for Pete's sake, hurry! Who's that? Who just came in?
Who are you?
A girl.
Keep away from me. Keep away, do you hear?
Keep away? What's the angle now?
Angle? Why did you bring me here?
Wait a minute. You mean he put the snatch on you, too?
When I was on my way home, chloroform or something. And the next thing I knew... Why are you pretending? You're in on it, too. You must be. It's a trap.
A trap, all right. But I'm not in on it. I'm in it, along with you. My name is Watson. Joe Watson.
I'm Betty Grant. You swear?
I swear. What would I lie about it for? I wonder why he put you in here. Put us together.
Who is he? What's he gonna do?
I don't know. He said something about an experiment. An experiment in fear, but... Hey, listen, we've got to get out of here somehow, some way.
He might be listening.
Very astute, my dear. Of course I'm listening.
What the... Where are you?
Right here in the dark. I've been here all the time.
Why, you...
No, Joe, don't. He must want you to go for him. He's probably got a gun.
Right again, my dear. Not that I'll need it. This is stage two of the experiment. A new stimulus to action has been introduced. Man against the unknown has become man and woman against the unknown.
Look, let's get down to brass tacks. Be sensible about this.
Thank you, Joe. That's why I won't need my gun. This new stimulus has been negated by an increased sense of responsibility. Responsibility towards the girl, and therefore by increased fear.
Blast you, gun or no gun, if I get my hands on you, where are you? Where are you?
Outside now, so you can relax. That was the final stimulus in this stage. Injured pride. The discovery that I could read your innermost thoughts and knew exactly what you were going to do. But you mustn't let that bother you. I already know everything you're going to do from now on. Till the end.
Listen, you! Helming! Helming! He's gone.
Joe.
I know. Hold on, baby. Don't let it get you. There must be a way, some way.
I suppose he's still listening?
It's hard to say. But I'm going to take a chance. There's one thing he didn't figure on. A telephone.
Here?
Yes. If I can find it again in the dark. It was over on the... Here it is. I put through 2 calls already to the police. Told them what was happening and asked them to get me out of here. I had to hang up both times before they could trace the call and get this number, but this time...
Hello. Hello, operator.
What? No, this isn't the operator. You're on a busy wire.
It doesn't matter. Thank heaven I got somebody. I've been trying for about 10 minutes now.
Hey, look, get off the line, will you? I've got to get through to the police. It's terribly important.
But you've got to help me. You've got to. My name's Ben Lazarian. I'm a prisoner someplace. I don't know where.
You what?
It's true. Strange house somewhere. A doctor who says his name is Helming.
What?
What are you laughing at?
Joe, what is it? What is it?
I haven't got headquarters. I've got a guy that... I'm sorry, Ben. It's no use.
What do you mean?
We're in the same boat you are. A girl named Betty Grant and myself. Helming's got us locked up, too.
You too?
Yeah. He said he knew everything we were thinking, everything we were going to do. I did get through to the police before, but I guess he caught wise. We're talking to each other over an inside line.
Ben.
Yeah. We're through.
No. Joe, don't say that. Don't even think it. Look, ask him exactly where he is.
Just where are you, Ben? Do you know?
It's hard to say. I was out cold when he brought me here. It's a kind of a hall, a passageway. Cement floor, ceiling, stone walls. There doesn't seem to be any door opening or anything like that.
That's what I thought here, too. But there must be one, or how would he have gotten you in there? Hey, listen, start looking. See if you can find it.
That's true. I never thought of that. If I do find the door and it opens into where you are...
That's right. Three of us together. We'll surely be able to figure something out then.
Hold on. I'll start pounding on the walls. You see if you hear anything.
Go ahead.
What's he doing?
He's going to knock on the walls to see if he's anywhere near us. And if he is, if he can find a door, we can get together. Hear anything?
I'm not sure. Maybe.
I'm not sure either. Sounds awful far away, is it? There, listen. That wall right there. Hello? Hello, Ben?
Yes?
We heard you. You're right next to us. Now, Ben, you listen and Betty will knock back. Go ahead, Betty. That way, Ben, you'll be able to tell just which wall it is.
Okay.
Right.
I hear it. I know where it is. Now to find the door, if there is one. Hold on.
He's got it. He's going to see if there's a door.
There must be one. There must be.
Ben.
And...
Ben. Ben. Hello.
What is it?
I don't know. I thought I heard a moan.
Joe. Look. There is a door. It's opening. It's open.
Dr. Helming.
Why, yes. Were you expecting someone?
Well, now that you mention it, Doctor, there was someone we've been expecting and waiting for. Since we first heard about that cozy little place of yours, I think he's finally arrived. He's a tall, rather striking gentleman with a skull for a face, and his name is Death.
Mr. Host, that Dr. Helming is insane. He gives me the chills.
Oh, maybe it's just because it's so cold tonight, Mary. You know, it's getting so nippy these days that some of my friends are having fur collars put on their shrouds.
Well, my friends are smarter. They know that the way to warm up in cold weather is with a hot cup of fragrant, delicious Lipton tea. A cup of tea in front of the fireplace just hits the spot these chilly days. But make it Lipton's and your pleasure's complete. You brew up a pot of Lipton's, throw another log on the fire, and summer tiptoes right into the room. Let the wind blow and the snow pile up on the roof. There's all the magic of June in a cup of Lipton's. In its deep amber color, its tantalizing fragrance, and its rich, hearty flavor. And what flavor that is. Never wishy-washy. Always brisk and full and satisfying. Try it, folks. You can let winter do its worst when you've got Lipton's in your cup.
That's right, Mary. But I think it's time now for something a little more cold-blooded.
Hey, wraps up part one of the dark chamber. Are you guys there? Can you hear me?
Hello?
I are here.
Hello?
I guess not.
Hello?
I are here.
Hello?
Hey, you know, in a 1948 New York Times article, Hyman Brown once told them, I use sound unashamedly. In a program like Inner Sanctum, where mood is the essence, I believe in the minimum of writing. The sound really gives us the picture. So let the sound carry it. Brown then gave an example of the type of storytelling the Inner Sanctum delivered without words. A car pulls up. A car door opens. Footsteps on the gravel. The background of wind and owl sounds. Footsteps stop. Clank of a handle of an iron door, obviously of a mausoleum. Door opens. Footsteps resume, this time on stone. The outdoor effects of wind and owl fade. Door clanks shut. Then the actor can scream out in terror. He says, sounds like that
cool.
Really put listeners in the thick of the action. And they gave Inner Sanctum an especially vivid atmosphere that other horror shows lack, despite equally good plots. There you go.
There you go. And with time a-wasting, we're going to wrap up real quick.
One last really quick announcement. June 25th, 1925 was the birthday of June Lockhart. That's today. Happy birthday, June.
Happy birthday, Mrs. Robinson. Cuckoo-ca-choo.
Somebody play the Lassie theme or something, you know?
something. If I had it ready, I would. Let's wrap up the dark chamber. So we'll kind of chat a little bit after the show.
Such is a cold-blooded murder. We're having a juicy one here tonight. Tale of gore galore. So let's see what's happening in the dark chamber. It's just a moment later now. Standing in the darkness of the strange room, Joe and Betty stare at the tall figure of Dr. Helming, silhouetted against the dim light from outside.
I asked you whether you were expecting someone.
Then it was just a trick. It was you on the phone all the time.
Now, don't you think I'd know his voice? Where is he?
Our friend, Mr. Lazzari, right outside.
What did you do to him? Answer me, what did you do to him?
Don't you know?
Sure, I know. You killed him. Did you kill him?
Quite a state you've gotten yourself into. Why? Is it because you finally tried to do something about your predicament and failed? Or is it because you weren't sure whether I would kill or not, and because you still don't know?
You're mad. Really mad.
You'll be interested to know. You have not done, nor will you do, one thing that I did not foresee. Every move you made, every emotion you felt, was charted, outlined, and...
What's that?
That, I think, is probably the police.
The police?
Yes. I know that you're very anxious to talk to them, and I'll see that you get a chance to. Soon. Good evening, officer.
I'm looking for a guy named Helming. Dr. Helming.
I'm Dr. Helming. Come in, won't you?
Okay. Thanks. This is kind of a funny business. It's about a phone call we got a while ago, finally traced here. The guy who said he was a prisoner or something.
That must have been Watson.
Yeah, that's his name. Joe Watson. Do you know him?
Of course. I can't tell you how sorry I am. It was really very careless of me, and I'll see that it doesn't happen again.
What do you mean?
If you did the investigating, which I'm sure you did, then you know that I, I don't run a sanitarium exactly, but I do take a few patients, mental cases, for treatment.
Ah, so that's it. A nurse, eh?
I wish you wouldn't say that. Watson's case is particularly interesting. A 4F who wasn't able to enlist, and he developed a persecution mania.
Thinks that everyone is down on him.
Not everyone, exactly. His present fantasy is that he's an ex-GI and that I'm keeping him prisoner.
Sure sounds plenty tough. Well, I guess I'll run along. I'm sorry I bothered you.
Don't you want to see them first, officer? Talk to them?
Ah, there's no need of that, Doctor. We get calls from cranks every day. We always investigate a cause.
But I insist. After all, you only have my word for it. There's just one thing I'd like to caution you about.
Sure, I know. I'll play along. Humor them.
Splendid. Right in here.
It's quite a room.
Joe, look.
It's a cop, and that means... Then you did get my message.
Sure, Joe. Took a little time to trace the call, but everything's okay.
Oh, thank heaven. It was such a screwy story, I was afraid that... Hey, wait a minute. Then why is he standing there like that? Why haven't you got the bracelets on him?
Dr. Helming? No need for any rough stuff. He said he'd come along quietly.
What?
You're lying. I don't know why, but there's something wrong here. Something... I know. You think we made the whole thing up. But we're crazy.
No.
It's true. He told you we were, and you believed him.
Of course not. Look, I...
Stop it, will you? Stop saying that. Well, if I could only prove it somehow, show you. I know. Lazzari.
Joe.
Murder. That'll open your eyes. Somewhere in that wall is a door. Make him open it. Show you what's behind it.
I think maybe I'd better be going, Doc.
But there is a door there, officer. Just a second. I'll open it for you. Here we are.
Body. It's gone.
These doctors are always hiding the bodies. Returns up again later. Give us another ring, huh? Maybe I shouldn't have said that. Hey, can I go out this way now?
Down to the end of the corridor, then to your right.
I'm sorry I gave you all this trouble.
This'll be all right. Thank you for being so understanding.
Quite all right.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, Doc.
Well, children?
Don't look that way, Joe. Don't. I know what you're thinking, and it's not true. We're not crazy. There was a body there.
Of course.
You hid it when you went out to let the cop in. And the telephone. You left that here purposely. Wanted me to use it. Get the police here.
Obviously. I told you that this was to be an experiment in fear. What I didn't tell you was that, in a sense, I was one of the subjects, too. It was important for me to learn how I would function under pressure. And speaking objectively, I think I did rather well. Don't you?
Why are you doing all this? What are you after?
There's no reason why I shouldn't tell you. If anyone truly understands the nature of fear, is able accurately to forecast the actions and reactions of an individual, then he can use fear as a weapon. Society will react as the individual reacts. You see, society doesn't want to believe that anything can menace it, doesn't want to take action to protect itself any more than the individual does. This was something that Hitler and Mussolini understood intuitively. I understand it scientifically. They failed, but I shall succeed.
You mean that you...
I'm afraid that's all I have time for. As far as you two are concerned, the experiment is finished. Completely finished. I have a few arrangements to take care of, and then, make the best of these last few minutes, for they will be your last.
Joe, do you hear anything? Is he coming back?
Not yet.
He's going to kill us, isn't he? Just the way he killed Lazzari.
He's going to try to.
Why are you sitting there like that, looking at me?
I guess because it's the first chance I've had to look at you.
How do you mean?
When they first put you in here, it was all dark. So many things happened after that. It's funny.
What is?
The things that you can tell about a person even in the dark. I kind of thought you were little, and I knew you were awful nice and had a lot of nerve, but I didn't think you'd be so pretty.
I'm not so pretty, Joe. I'm not very brave either. I'm scared. I'm awful scared. And I don't want to die.
Don't worry about it, baby. Don't think about it.
Just sitting here like this, waiting. And there's nothing we can do. Every time we did try to do something, it was something he knew about. Expecting us to do.
Please, baby.
Joe, something happened to you. You were scared before, too, but now...
It was not knowing that was scary. Not knowing what was going to happen or why or what you could do about it. But once you do know, once you make up your mind, then you've got to forget about it. Forget about everything.
Make up your mind about what?
This is going to sound kind of funny, especially now, but... Well, do you have anyone special? A fellow, I mean, that...
Why... Oh, no.
That's good. I mean... Well, gee, it's a shame we never met before. If we had, we wouldn't be here now. I mean, we probably would have been out together someplace, and... What time do you get through work, usually?
Six. The store closes at 5:30, but...
Me too. I could have picked you up at about 6.
Joe, I hear something. He's coming.
Yeah. Okay, get up. Over in the corner of the room so that he'll see you as soon as he opens the door.
What about you?
I'll be waiting over here, behind the door.
Joe, you're not going to...
I haven't got much of a chance, but, well, wish me luck. It'll be quick anyway.
Oh, no. Joe, please.
All right, my young friend. Time. All my arrangements have been completed, and I'm... Where's Watson?
Right here.
Joe, Scotty,
it's okay, baby. Didn't get me. I got the barrel of the gun. And... Good Lord. Got him. In the chest.
But you couldn't have done that. You couldn't have.
Outside, Betty. See if you can find another phone. Call the police again. And this time, tell them to bring an ambulance.
But you couldn't have done it. It was all plotted, graphed, and worked out in detail. I knew just what you were going to do, how you would react. By this time, you were to be in a state of complete frustration, resigned, ready to die. Why did you do it? Why?
I don't know. Now just take it
but
easy.
I've got to know. You've got to tell me. Was it because of the girl? Out of desperation? Because you knew you were going to die anyway?
I tell you, I don't know. I just know that... Well, a guy will take just so much pushing around.
Pushing around, eh? Well, it sounds to me as if one of our characters is going to get a lot of pushing around at the end of a pitchfork and in a very warm climate. Yes, good old Helming's finished. He's got to be if we're to have at least two corpses, the inner sanctum minimum. Oh, you think that's a little arbitrary? Not at all. We've got to have at least two corpses to play our theme song, When a Body Meets a Body.
Theme song? I didn't know we had one.
Oh, Mary, we've got lots of them. Didn't you ever hear our skeleton song, I Ain't Got No Body?
Mr. Host, let's be serious for a moment, because I want to talk about one of the most serious things in life, our health. For instance, the war may eventually lead to an increase in tuberculosis, and that's why the makers of Lipton tea and Lipton soup have asked me to remind you of the annual sale of Christmas seals. Funds raised by this sale support tuberculosis control programs, x-rays, health education, and medical research. Remember, over 500,000 people in the United States and Canada suffer from this disease. So buy as many Christmas seals as you can. No one is safe from tuberculosis until everyone is safe. And Christmas seals can save lives.
And now, friends, here's a word of wholesome advice. If you've had any murderous thoughts lately, give them up. It just doesn't pay. Well, I know a lady who killed off her husband, and you know, it just ruined her marriage. Yes, he grew very cold to her. Oh, by the way, this month's Inner Sanctum mystery novel is The Fearful Passage by H.C. Branson. Yes, and next week's Inner Sanctum story, directed by Hyman Brown and brought to you by Lipton Tea and Lipton Soup. Next week's story is about a vampire. He's a very stingy fellow, as when you go out with him, the drinks are always on you. Naturally, we're going to try to make him feel at home here, so I've just ordered a good supply of bats with green eyes, a coffin for him to sleep in, and a wooden stake to drive through his heart. I wouldn't stake my life on it, friends, but he may visit you before next Tuesday. Until then, good night. Pleasant dream?
Hang on 1 second. I got the wrong thing up here. Where? There we go. All right. Okay, here we go. Most fear involves association. So to overcome fear, stop associating. There you go.
Here we go. And that wraps up our three tales for tonight. We got a couple more tomorrow as we continue with our mad scientists. It's quiet, please. Because that's the
quiet, please.
Quiet, please. And then Black Castle.
Yeah, not too many of those recordings out there. A short program, but we got one.
That we do.
Yes.
6:19.
You know, we forgot about one mad scientist when we were talking about our favorite mad scientist. What about the brain?
As in Pinky,
Pinky in the brain?
Yeah, it's Pinky in the brain.
Oh, gosh. He's a classic.
Going to take over the world.
We already mentioned Doc from Back to the Future was a benevolent mad scientist.
Yes.
Let's see. Oh, God, she's just so mad.
Young Frankenstein, the Gene Wilder, had a really fun take on a mad scientist.
Yes.
A fun madness.
Yeah. And the Dr. Frankenstein himself, yes.
Not Dr. Fibes, says CW.
Good one, CW.
Good one. Not only a single motion picture, but a follow-up, too. The Return of.
And maybe some people wouldn't consider it that way, but certainly The Invisible Man. And you've got a very early tale in literature of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Yes.
I never understood that it was either the lobby card or it wasn't Aladdin. Whoever did models, you put together little plastic models. Aurora.
Yeah, the Aurora model.
They had this weird image of Dr. Jekyll. It looked like he was pouring the serum into his neck instead, he was supposed to be grabbing his neck like he's choking on it.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just a weird.
Yeah, there's that classic scene where he's grabbing his own throat, but the Aurora model looks a little odd.
Yeah.
I'm pouring it into my neck.
Yes. There was a comedy guy that showed up, and he had
that was Rotwang in Metropolis.
Rotwang?
Dr. Rotwang.
Oh,
was
wow.
Dr.
Wow, there you go.
Yeah.
Really peeling back the pages of history there.
Oh, yeah. I love these silent films. I'm studying them for a reason.
Uh-oh. Uh-oh.
Yes. Our next radio show will be silent.
Yes, we'll be silent.
Yes,
radio.
3.5 hours of Dale and silent movies.
On radio. Yes.
On radio.
On radio, yes.
Yes. Yes. Brought to you
during
in...
During that time, though, we'll take a break to do charades.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
On the radio. On the radio, yes.
Yes.
And I will introduce my first and only one-man mime show. It'll be great.
Oh,
I promise.
There you go. There you go. So now you got a full slate. That'll be next week. No.
Yeah.
Kidding.
Yeah.
But yeah, join us tomorrow at 6:30. for those wonderful tales from Quiet, Please. And Black Castle.
Quiet, Please.
Absolutely.
That's probably disturbing. And after that, at 8 o'clock, when we're done, all good.
Oh, yeah. There's supposed to be, hopefully, if all goes well, if all goes well and the chemistry is right, that there will be a horrible horror starring Guard of the Ghoul on twitch.live.tv.findmeifyoucan. I don't know.
There you go. And I want to thank everyone. I'm talking Fogsbane, CW, Linda, Lou, good old Bob, Rob Smith Jr. Thanks for joining us in the chat. We'll see you next time. That's tomorrow at 6:30 Eastern.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him. when next we meet in Frankenstone. Don't come alone.
Hey, that was perfect.
Look at that.
That was perfect.
Huh.
Perfect.
It was a mistake.
It was a mistake.
Boy, what started as a slow start, that was a nice turnout tonight.
Yeah, yeah.
I agree. There was a mad scientist guy that I use from time to time, and I can't think of his name, and I can't think of the name of the video that... And he's a mad scientist guy. He's bald. He's got, I think, a goatee, and he's got dark glasses. And I wonder if his name is Doctor. That would help, wouldn't it?
I can almost see like J. Carroll Nash or somebody like that.
Doctor. Doctor.
The way you described.
Doctor. Doctor Monster. No, that's from Sesame Street. Let's make it Dr. Doctor. Doctor.
Well, it's funny how mad. Give me the news. Funny how mad scientists, they either start out mad, you know what I mean, or the process of whatever they're researching drives them mad.
Drives them mad.
The results
one guy,
of their research make them mad.
I think the obsession makes them mad, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, they need to stop obsessing.
Well, I think the Invisible Man, it was the elixir that drove him mad.
True. Rat poison does that to you.
Yes.
Oh, I found it. It's Dr. Steele.
I attest to that fact.
Yes. Dr. Steele. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Dr. Steele, but he did a whole bunch of public service announcements that are on YouTube. One of them is Create. One's about insanity. One's about reality engineering. Aliens, building a utopian playland. This guy is hilarious, and he's a mad scientist guy. I don't know the background of him, just Dr. Steele.
I do know you've shown some of his videos on the Horrible Horror.
Yes,
I do know who
yes.
you're talking about now.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I do use, in fact, I think now I'm going to use some more of them tonight, I'll goof with them. They're a lot of fun. He's crazy. He's like fun crazy, my kind of crazy.
Really good production aspects he has, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Dr. Steele.
I wish.
Search Dr. Steele and check him out.
Yeah, and it's S-T-E-E-L, like the metal, Dr. Steele. And just D-R Steele. And just crazy guy. Amazingly. I was so happy to run across that. How did Dr. Oh, Dr. would be Dracula. Dr. Devil and Mr. Hare from Bugs Bunny. What's that about? Dr. Devil and Mr.
Yeah.
Hare.
He was a bald-headed guy, and anytime there was an evil scientist, those were in the later Warner Brothers, like the 50s.
Yeah. I've got 1964 on this.
Yeah, could be 60s as well. I think he was the guy who introduced that monster with the tennis shoes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And what else? The Ghostbusters, the original one with Forrest Tucker and Spencer. No, Larry Storch. Yes, and Burns as the gorilla. They had a mad scientist on there like every other week.
In a way, the modern Ghostbusters could be looked at as mad scientists to some degree.
Very true. Yeah, they came up with the ghost catcher devices and stuff. Yeah. Let's see. Did I get any more on here? There are a lot of horror hosts that are of the mad scientist variety.
Yes. There are.
Let's see.
Oh, how about Dr. Moreau?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
There's an early scientist story for you. Mm-hmm.
I can think of two more horror hosts that are doctors. Dr. Creep, and a lot of people know him. He passed away a little while ago. And then Dr. Paul Bearer, which is more in my neck of the woods. Dr. Paul Bearer was a horror host out of Tampa, I think.
Yes, Floridian.
And he passed away. And he's been replaced with Dr. Paul Bearer number two. or
that's what I understand.
Junior.
He does resemble the first guy a bit.
Yeah, it's amazing what you can do with makeup. That's all I can say.
Yep. Well, yeah, but he does a good job of it.
I don't know that they're related. Sammy Terry was a horror host, and his son picked up the gauntlet after his father passed. So, I mean, it's amazing that actually happens, but it's kind of neat also.
Yeah, yeah. Because usually it's not a relative that gets to take that over.
Yep. Like Son of Ghoul. That's not even funny.
In well, search, oh, there's Dr. Creep. I mentioned him. Dr. Duck, Dr. McAdoo. I don't know if you guys are familiar. Dr. McAdoo, kind of strange.
I don't know Dr. McAdoo.
Dr. McAdoo does a maca hula hula dance, and it's pretty funny. Very weird.
Yeah.
Maca hula hula dance. And the Mad Piper, High Quail. High quality. Oh, that's what that is. Never mind.
There you go.
But, yeah, Dr. McAdoo. High Quail.
About every other role that Boris Karloff played, because he played a couple
of
mad scientists in the Universals and also some later films.
Yeah.
Yes.
He was always trying to bring people back from the dead or something.
I bet Benny Hill probably did a mad scientist a few times.
Oh, he would have had to.
And if he did, then Carol Burnett definitely did. And Vincent Price definitely all the time.
Oh, yeah. As CW brought up, one of my favorites, Dr. Fives.
Dr. Fives. I don't know what it is about Dr. Fives. I love Dr. Fives.
Even Edward Scissorhands, wasn't he a mad doctor in that?
Yes, he was.
He created Edward, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, what a swan.
I don't really understand how he created him. I think he manufactured him. I don't know. He wasn't like, there's genetics in there, so there's genetics and metal.
I think the kid might have been born without hands or something and nobody wanted him. Something like that. I don't know. I'll have to see it again.
Have a knife. Have another. Yes.
Well,
now, Edward, don't run with the scissors.
Well, he just hadn't gotten to his hands yet to replace his hands. So, but he had put those scissors there so he would have something to work with. So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You think
putting pliers there
might have been helpful.
Yeah.
Yes. I was telling Dave, I just recently got a Swiss Army knife. And I think Edward Scissorhands would have been better with a Swiss Army knife.
Yes.
I don't know.
Oh, Swiss Army knife, man. There you go for a new comic book character.
Yeah.
One of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
I am.
You're being abused by Joe. How's the dog? The dog's not named Joe. That's your cat, right?
Yeah, Joey's getting a visit from, because he's still cowardly ass, will still not go upstairs. And so he just loves me to death when I'm down here either working or doing radio. And the pup is doing well. Thank you for asking. He's learning. Almost got that doing the outside thing. In fact, I danced around an inappropriate comment. I was talking to my boss, and he says, hey, on Friday, the holiday, you know, the Friday before the holiday weekend, there might be early release. And I says, he had just asked me about the puppy. I says, yeah, ironically, the puppy's had a few issues with early release.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Well, his whole deal, he wakes up very, very, very slowly. But the minute he gets like half of his sense, he wants to go number one. So that's where he's made his mistakes. He just wasn't quite awake yet.
I'm trying. Oh, damn, I didn't make it.
That'll be me in a few years from age. But
yeah, it's kind of odd for a puppy to be going through that.
Well, they say collies, they don't need a lot of energy. They're comfortable. They're good house dogs. They're good family dogs. They don't bite. They nip, but they don't bite.
And is it nipping and not biting? What's going on there now?
He's not doing too bad. We kind of I've been correcting him on the nipping.
There you go.
Yeah, you're going to jail, or we're not going to play with you and love you anymore.
He's going to go to jail.
Yeah.
To jail with you.
Yeah. No, we actually don't have a jail. A lot of people have suggested it. Jail is outside on the leash, which isn't really much of a punishment because he loves being outside.
No, the better thing would be to, and I don't know, I don't know where people have this much space in their, like, I have a 1,000-square-foot home, and if I had to, I don't know where I could put a quote-unquote indoor crate for a dog. None of my dogs had a crate.
Yeah.
But some people, man, it's like, oh, nope, crate, they're going to get a crate. And the crate is like, okay, go in the crate, stay there. And it's like,
yeah.
But they like it. There's a security to it. I don't know.
There is.
The doggy thing.
I used one with my old husky, the dog I had years ago, and he had a chewing issue. He was, like, tearing up furniture and, like, really nice woodwork in my old house. You know, it was an old home. And it's like, all right, you're going in jail. And it got funny. I would go for my keys, and he would just slink down to jail.
Mm-hmm.
He knew that's where he was going if I was grabbing my keys. Oh, Dad's leaving the house. No, he's not going to leave me alone. I'm going to jail.
Yeah. but some dogs, you know, pathetic.
I couldn't stand it. After like 2 months of using the little jail, we just let him out, and he never chewed again. So he must have got the message. I don't know.
No, I think
we were away from home than go to jail.
Yeah. Well, if it's used as a deterrent, most animals, I think they're fairly cognizant. They understand what's going on, and
yeah.
You can communicate with them on levels most people don't think exist. You know, they understand what's happening.
You can, and body language is huge because he's kind of easy to read when he's ready to. And he's learned so much. He's almost housebroken now. He's starting to skip when he wants to go. It's like, good boy, let's go.
Yeah.
And he goes outside to decorate.
Yeah, there you go.
And he's got a massive yard to do so.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Oh, that's cool.
Especially.
Well, I'm glad the personality seems to be doing okay. He's getting along with you guys.
He's extremely lovable, but he has this little, you know, this little demon puppy streak he hasn't quite grown out of yet, where he just goes, like, I don't know, berserk in his head for a little bit. And it's like pent-up energy, so that's also a key. Okay, let's go for a walk.
Yes, walking. Walking, walking, walking.
Oh, he's getting real good on the leash. He's just...
Yeah. I used to really enjoy the walking. I used to walk about 3 miles a day. Oh, yeah,
good.
Yeah. No, me and the other dogs are like 3 hours a day, 3 miles a day.
Yes, he's a little small for 3 miles yet.
Right. Yeah,
because I'll tell you what, after a good mile walk, he is conked.
Mm-hmm.
He's done for 2 hours. He's got to take a nap.
Yeah, well, there you go. Yep. In which case, it is done. It's a desired need to burn off that energy.
Yep. It's almost hilarious watching Joe on the door up to the basement, because, of course, we don't close it or latch it or anything. And I can see him sometimes on the landing, looking up the stairs, going, "I want to go, but I'm scared. And I know, oh gosh, I don't know what to do."
Is the cat not even interacting with the dog at all, or?
No, not yet. I do not believe the dog is aware the cat is here, but the cat is very aware the dog is here.
Isn't that odd?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a wuss. His mother scared the crap out of my wife's cat, and the cat lived in the bedroom for probably a month and a half. But when she finally, you know what I mean, associated with everybody, she took over. She was like the queen.
Mm-hmm.
Listen to me now, Pa, you dumb little kittens. So, you know, it's just going to take a little time. But he's you know, because he was real young. He was a little less than 10 weeks when we brought him home.
Uh-huh.
So he's doing good. Good pup. Collies are supposed to be great. And so far he's living up to it, I think. He's just adorable. I mean, he's beautifully marked. And just hope he stays healthy.
Yeah, that's the other fun. All the health stuff.
Yeah.
Keep that guy healthy.
Yep. Oh, yeah, we're getting them really good food and following the breeder's advice. But yet Denise is instinctive. She is with. She can read animal body language better than I can. I mean, she even knows bugs. This woman will bring in a praying mantis and go, look at how pretty, and look at this toad. His eyes are like little jewels. I found a tree frog. Here's a snake. You know, I love it. Or I'll find one and bring it to her because she, I know she's going to want to see it and hold it for a minute. Let me turn them loose. Go about your business. We'll take a picture in a while if it's something really striking.
Did any of you guys, along the lines of being a mad scientist, get a chemistry set as a kid?
Yes. I got one from Bazooka Joe.
Did it have any nuclear material in it?
No, not nuclear. They had the little things like, oh, add two clear liquids and it turns red and little stuff like that.
I may or may not have gotten one. My memory's not good on it. But if it did, I was disappointed because it definitely didn't create any of the things I wanted it to.
I tried making my own. My father liked working with wood, and he had lots of tools in the basement. So I made this little rack and drilled little holes in it that you could stick
test tube?
Prescription bottles, empty-use prescription bottles in there. And the cap would, like, hold it in place. And, well, I tried making my own chemistry shit. Not there were no pills in it or anything, but, like, in one I'd put vinegar, the other one I'd put baking soda so I can make my volcano. And then my father made the mistake of telling me where the hydrochloric acid was.
This massive
glass bottle filled with 12 molar hydrochloric acid. That we used, like, you would put a little drop to clear out an entire huge pool.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
why would a home have that?
because we had a pool. We had a pool, and my father incredibly strong hydrochloric acid.
Okay.
Kill the algae and stuff, you know?
Yes, yes.
Well, oh, God, I got my hands on that. That was fun. Poured a bunch of it on the street, and it, like, started bubbling up. I was expecting, like, Steve McQueen to come running around because it looked like the Blob, you know? And it was hilarious.
Get out the water, Hales. Get out the water,
down the street, like, what the hell is that? It bubbled up a good 3-4 feet, you know?
Wow.
It took a good brain to make it go away, but, boy, we had to light out of there because we didn't want to get... You know, I had other kids with me. It's so fun doing something insane by yourself. When you're a dumb kid, because you like to show off.
Yeah.
Yep. Hydrochloric acid, nice. That could have ended poorly.
It could have. Hey, Joey, let me put some of this in your ear. He's like, oh, okay. It feels better now.
See, I never had stupid thoughts like that. You know what I mean? I never... No, I believe me, I knew bad kids that tried doing bad things to animals, and I hated that. I'm like, don't even do that. That's one way to turn me violent with an animal.
Right. Well, that's why you always practice on humans.
Of course.
See.
As you should.
Of course. Yeah. Yes. You know, stick to your genus, darn it. You know.
Yeah. Experiment on your own damn species.
Right. What was the movie... There was a movie, The Killer. They took dogs and they glued something on them or
killer
something.
Shrews.
And
killer shrews.
Yeah. Oh, that was so
bad.
When
I hosted it, I called them dogs wearing rugs.
Dogs wearing
dogs
rugs.
Rug wearing dogs.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was a weird film.
Like.
Yeah. Crazy.
I always felt it was one of the halfway better public domain movies to host, horror films.
Which one was that?
Killer Shrews.
Killer Shrews.
Much fun mocking it. There's so much to work with.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, after all, if you got rug wearing dogs.
If you got the rug wearing dogs, that's right.
You made that little noise. Remember that?
You have to have, that was just bizarre.
And what was his name? Max Bear? What was the
Bear.
Oh, no, the guy who played the lead in that. Not Max Bear, but...
He
was in a lot of sitcoms around that time in the 60s and 50s.
I am so not associated. I know about that they use dogs to mimic shrews, but I'm not associated with the movie itself. I don't know it. I know it, but I don't know it. It's just weird.
Ooh.
Well, we could look it up.
My son just sent me a bunch of my critters.
Oh, he did what? I looked up the June Lockhart thing. Because I thought that was kind of cool. Killer shrews.
It's going to take a while to upload because they're like huge.
James Best?
That's
is that
who
the
it
guy?
Is. James Best, thank you.
James Best. What do you look like, James Best?
He did a couple of Twilight films, too.
Yeah, he was in the Good Old Boy thing. What was that called? The Dukes of Hazzard, the Good Old Boy thing. Yeah, whatever that was. I was not a fan.
Oh, yeah.
He was one of the, wasn't he the I don't
a police officer?
Yeah, I thought
he
was.
He was Sheriff Roscoe Coltrane. But someone else that was popular in there was Ken Curtis was in there in The Killer Shrews.
Yes,
who do you see, Matt? Let's go get him.
Yeah, the guy who played the heavy in there, he was in a couple John Wayne movies, I think. He was in a number of Westerns.
And was she really big in anything? Well,
I think she was a model or some kind of Swedish actress or something.
Wasn't she
the gal in that movie?
Yeah, she went into the Bob Cummings Show, Adventures of Ozzie and Harriet, Playhouse 90. But she was also in Richard Diamond, Private Detective, in one episode. And then she was in Killer Shrews, and that was the end of her career. No, she was in a few other things. But
that was the end of her career.
Not much more. And that was it. Killer Shrews, pin in the hat. That was it.
I think I need an app to open these.
Yeah.
What is Google app? Mm. Oh, there we go.
Oh,
look at that. Various and assorted creatures. Holy God. They're like every animal we've ever seen in our lives.
You've documented your animals that you've had?
Well, there's one of my wife holding a baby bunny we found nesting in our yard. What else we got here? My son's dog, my daughter's cat, some pictures he recently took of my puppy. What else do we got here? His pet's looking out the window sadly, like, where is everyone? A bird's nest. We had a nest of robins nesting on our spotlights on the front porch. Let's see what else we got here. Three turtles we had that we took care of for about a year. What is that, a nest full of caterpillars? Strange, oh my God, an incredible picture of my son's dog leaping to catch a frisbee. A frog in a puddle of muck. A turtle on a log from the park.
Any dog playing poker pictures?
Huh?
Any dog playing poker pictures?
No dogs playing pokers, oddly.
No.
Tree frogs
and
various and assorted other wildlife pictures. Underwear eating moth. Ooh, a spring peeper. And there's me holding a garter snake I had found.
Now, I ran across that photo. I don't know how or where.
What's that?
Of you holding a snake. The snake is in the foreground of the image, of the photograph.
Yeah, I probably post every year I catch one. And the wife, let's get a picture of him. He's so cute.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my wife's cat, the beep, who's gone now. And my fat baby, who's gone now. And Joe, when he was pretty young. Oh, my God. Picture of my fat cat. Oh, my God. It's insane how fat she was.
Hey, you guys ever watched that Quantum Leap when it was on or afterwards?
I did.
I watched a bit.
I did. Yes.
Yeah, it's on Roku channel right now, Dale. And I'm catching season 5 because I don't think there's some in season 4 I don't think I caught because I have season 1 through 3 on DVD, but I don't have 4 or 5. And there's a lot of episodes in 5 I didn't see. And this one here, I think it's like episode 5 or 6 from season 5. He leaps into a vampire. That's your kind of story,
Ooh.
Huh?
Ooh, yeah.
The heck? How does that happen? So in their reality, they had.
I'm not through the story yet, but yeah, he leapt into and of course Al's going nuts because he leapt into a vampire.
Ha! Huh. I bet. I ran across a place called